Hello, 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 everybody. I am Pedro.
And I'm Meredith.
And this is Gritty Reboot. And this week we are back covering reboots again.
Yes.
And indeed. You know what? We wanted to do something else this week, and it kind of fell apart on us.
Yeah.
And so we went to something that was standby that we owned a copy of that would be easy to do. And that was, oddly enough, what is, like, I've sort of reevaluated and looked back on, it's been an amazing franchise. Child's Play.
Yeah.
Child's Play is an amazing franchise.
Absolutely.
I think I discount it entirely when I talk about, like, Nightmare on Elm Street being, like, the best horror franchise. The hit and miss ratio in the Child's Play Chucky franchise is really fantastic.
Yeah.
And especially for us, because I think we like a few movies that people don't really care for. I remember, and you might already tune out and you might already give one star, we didn't hate the remake. Now, we haven't watched it again. When we saw it, we didn't hate it. We weren't clamoring for it, but we didn't hate it. But
was 6 years ago.
It was 6 years ago. I think, was that COVID? No, that was that COVID?
No.
No, that was too early for that.
Yeah.
And like I said, it came and went. We had low expectations and saw it on like video, like a year after it came out. We're like, oh, this was fine. And I guess I hadn't thought about the Child's Play franchise until you said, hey, let's watch this one. We have both movies. Let's go ahead and just do this. And I think this is why I appreciate the show, because it gave me a chance to sit down and watch Child's Play again, not just let it be on in the background, not just have it up there while I'm playing XCOM on my phone. Or chatting with a buddy or something like that, to actually like watch a piece of cinema that I've seen 1,000 times again.
Yeah.
It's not like seeing it for the first time, but it can be pretty freaking cool.
I absolutely love Chucky. I love the Child's Play movies. I've loved them since I was a kid. This is the first movie I obviously saw as a kid. So I have very fond memories of this. It scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. As it did, I think, most kids.
Yeah, I think anybody who's late 30s, I think if you're 35 to 45, I think that's a 10-year gap where you would honestly be pretty scared of Chucky. And that would have been a terrifying thing, you know, right in that age bracket.
He cussed, and he cussed like an adult, so he said adult things.
Yeah,
He was aggressive, and he was a doll, and most girls have dolls. And Cabbage Patch Kids were really big at that point, so
yeah.
You had that.
In case you don't know what the Cabbage Patch Kids were, they just was an incredibly popular doll. They all had like this, like they were all born. They had like their own like individual names, birth certificate and stuff like that. And like that was the whole gimmick. And America went wild for them. Before the internet, things were crazy. People were fighting inside of department stores literally to get the last.
I had some.
I believe I had one as well. My grandfather, you remember my grandfather, he fought those crowds back in the day to get Cabbage Patch Kids for me and my sister. I was a bit too young to like appreciate what it was. It's like, all right, whatever. My mom mentioned that like you didn't care at all, but he still got one for you. But there were other fads as well. But that was one of the biggest. And one of the things I do want to mention, this movie closely spoofs the doll My Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you remember the My Buddy, and if right now, if you've taken the time to, if you're on the treadmill and you just Googled My Buddy, you're immediately going to be like, oh yeah, that clearly did inspire Child's Play. And that was a brand that probably hates this fucking movie because it completely torpedoed their sales.
Yeah.
Because no one's carrying My Buddy dolls around anymore, are they?
No.
No.
Nobody knows what that is.
Exactly. Because Child's Play completely overtook it with a parody. And I think that's an amazing cultural thing that doesn't get talked about enough. That this thing that it was almost directly parodying is completely forgotten. And everybody knows this horror icon instead, Chucky.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a testament to these films. And I mean, they really are impressive. It's so weird to think of an entire franchise with a continuity.
Yeah.
Right? We're Friday the 13th fans. And like, there's no fucking continuity. There's like a couple of movies that like stitch things together and then they forget about shit.
Yeah.
And then they're in the future. It's bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jason can do things in some movies that he can't do in others. It's kind of whatever. Nightmare is a bit similar, but at least there's a bit more canon there. I mean, Halloween, good Lord, right? There's been two reboots of that one. They've gone back and retconned certain parts of the franchise. Like, those places are a mess. And you don't see that at all with Child's Play. And I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a birthday they'll always remember.
Can we open the presents now, Mommy?
He's something, isn't he?
This is Andy's.
Time for bed.
So you talked about it earlier. I guess I wanted to follow up. Did you have a toy that you were, like, afraid of? Like, a toy that you had that you, like, put in the back of the closet?
Can I Chucky.
No, I don't think I did. I loved all of my stuffed animals.
I had a toy that my grandmother had given me on my dad's side. I don't think you ever really met her.
No, I'd never met. I don't think so.
But yeah, she gave me this toy, and it was like a soldier from like the 70s. But his face had kind of melted a little bit, I guess, and he looked a little off. But not off enough to be like throw him out, but he didn't look really human anymore.
Yeah.
And for some odd reason, I think there was a night when I had like a bad hot dog or something like that, and he was sitting next to my lamp, and like the shadows on his face like creeped me out the entire night, as like I had like stomach pains and like a little bit of a fever. And I'd always been like terrified of that doll. And I remember like a month and a half later, there was a time we had, hey, do you have any toys you want to give away? And he was immediately like slam dunk that fucking knockoff G.I. Joe into that donation bin. And I got rid of that guy. So that was my early memory with a doll that haunted me, even though I didn't think he was like Chucky in any sort of way. Do you have an early memory of watching this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a, what do you got for me?
I just remember watching it as a kid,
yeah,
and being totally scared by it. And it's, you talk about having nightmares. It's probably one of the only horror movies I watched, well, that young.
Yeah.
For one, and that scared the shit out of me to where I had nightmares.
Yeah, because by 1990, this movie's already on like USA,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's already airing, you know, with the censored version. So it's out there and the sequel's already out. I can remember, and I'd seen it on VHS. I was pretty familiar with it. I think at that point we were already stealing HBO and or Showtime or whichever one. And this was like airing on a loop every other night, Child's Play. You know, it was a popular fucking movie at the time. So I think my early memory of the movie, besides watching, is that from the video store, we got like a bumper sticker that said, "Back off, Jack, Chucky's back." And we put that on the top of our old VCR, which we just used for rewinding. Mm-hmm. Because old person fact, you needed to rewind videotapes and something else because it would wear down. It would wear, you needed to do it first off because you would get a charge from the video store if you didn't rewind it. And rewinding would just wear down your VCR.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a tape player. It's all gears and mechanisms. And there's a VCR was so well engineered. It's crazy how many moving parts that it had. So every time you used it, it wore it down. So people use these other things. Some of them had just rewinders that would just rewind the tape or whatever. And so we just used a VCR that the video out just stopped working one day. And so we just used it to rewind it. And we taped that on there. And that VCR continued to rewind things for like 11 years. We threw it out only because DVDs came around. Mm-hmm. But it served that purpose. So I saw that thing for years. You probably saw that. You probably didn't notice it because it was probably faded as all hell at that point and tucked into a corner. But we still had it by the time I knew you in high school.
Mm.
VHS was already on the way out when we were in high school.
Yeah.
But yeah, VHS was passé. You know, I remember that part, that much I remember, because we were watching DVDs. That was the big deal.
Yeah. We were the youngsters.
Youngsters.
Watching the DVDs.
Watching things in digital clarity.
Yeah. Finest of all clarities.
Indeed. Indeed. I wanted to talk about a little bit about the production here of Child's Play, because it's kind of a story in itself. So first off, let's get off the bat. Everything that went into this movie, all the chaotic production, totally worth it, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
We have a long franchise. $9 million budget. Makes $33.2 million domestically, brings in $44.4 million worldwide. A very, very successful film. So one of the points I want to make is a little bit about the history of the talking doll movie. This is like a well-known cliche and part of the horror, one of the big horror tropes, really. And one of the things that was inspirational to the film is an old Twilight Zone episode called Talking Tina.
Talking Tina.
Well, pardon me, I think it was called Living Doll, actually.
Talking Tina.
Was Talking Tina the name of the episode? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
The episode was... Oh, I didn't write it down.
My name is Eric Strader.
But either way, Talking Tina, everybody knows what that is. And,
mm-hmm,
and that's what it is. You hear her right now, she's talking shit to... Is that Telly Savalas in this episode? Did did you look at the cast of that?
Annabelle. No,
Do you even know who Telly Savalas is?
No, I don't.
It's Kojak.
Kojak.
You don't know who Kojak is?
What is a Kojak?
You get the fuck off this show. I can't believe you don't know who Kojak is. He was like a 70s detective.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was bald. You never heard somebody call a bald guy Kojak?
No.
You
never.
You are the worst person who ever lived.
It has never come up. I don't know why.
Your blind spot of Kojak sickens me and I want a divorce.
Let's see how many people actually know what Kojak is.
I think a lot of people are going to know what Kojak is despite it. Well, actually, there was a reboot, unrelated clip play. There was a reboot to that in the late 90s with Ving Rhames. I think it lasted a couple seasons. Mm. And that is. And so, yeah, that concludes our episode on Kojak. No more of the Kojak podcast.
No.
But so what point was I making? Oh, anyway. So, yeah, you threw me off by your hatred of Kojak or your ignorance of Kojak. I'll fix it later. I'm sure it's on Tubi. Everything's on Tubi. There was a Talking Doll movie, a Talking Doll show in Talking Tina, and one of the other inspirations is Trilogy of Terror, which had like a little, kind of like a Tasmanian devil kind of doll. I've never seen it. I think I might have seen it as a kid, but I barely remember it. It's just a doll runs around like biting people, and it can infect you with, and make you kind of like rabid or something like that. I barely recall it, but these were the inspirations that helped us get to Chucky. Mm-hmm. This film was produced by David Kirschner. He was on a flight to Europe, and he read a book called The Dollhouse Murders. And he didn't want to adapt that book, but for some reason, it gave him the idea to make a movie about a killer doll. Why the Dollhouse Murders did that, I don't know, but he was very insistent on naming it over and over again in the interview I listened to. So he goes back and talks to his assistant that he wants to make this killer doll movie, and she lets him know that there's a script called Bloody Buddy, and that's written by a young writer. He's 24 years old, Don Mancini. And this screenplay is getting some pretty good buzz, and it's kind of perfect for what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So they sign him to a deal. Initially, they were attracted to the film because it had a bit of a different title. It was called Batteries Not Included. It was shopped around for a number of months on until word came around in Variety that Steven Spielberg was actually making a movie called Batteries Not Included. That's the fantasy sci-fi film with Jessica Tandy that came out, I think, also in 1988. And so they had to change the title to Bloody Buddy. And then, of course, obviously it got changed to Child's Play at some mm-hmm. point later on. I do want to mention that Kirschner is in love with this script. And it's a very strange thing because David Kirschner was actually a producer of Disney movies.
Okay.
American Tail. Fievel.
I love it.
Yeah, he made all those movies. That's what he was known for. But he was so desperate to do this killer doll movie. And he used a lot of clout to get it made. $9 million budget is nothing to sneeze at, especially in 1988, if you really think about it. For what this is a slasher movie. That's a big budget. So this is a producer who really knows what he's doing. So I think the other thing that has to be mentioned is Don Mancini writes this script. And Don Mancini is the father of Child's Play. He writes every single installment of the franchise except for the MGM reboot that we'll cover next week.
And he even directs a couple of movies.
Yeah, he does direct a few, and he is the showrunner on the show. So, I mean, he is the steward of this series. So after he writes the script, as I said, he's 24 years old. He has control ripped away from him because he's just a 24-year-old kid. He doesn't know shit about Hollywood. When they bring on Tom Holland to direct this movie, because of David Kirschner's prowess as a producer, he actually did have opportunities and did talk to William Friedkin, Irving Kirschner, and Robert Weiss about directing this movie. So he's actually going after A-level talent. And they had to not even settle for Tom Holland. Tom Holland's coming off a film that we just talked about a few months ago, Fright Night. Mm-hmm. That was a big hit for the studio. And he had done another hit film with Whoopi Goldberg, whose name I just can't remember, like Fatal Cop or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some weird title like that. Maybe I'll splice it in later. But he's coming off a couple hits, so this works out pretty well. He immediately takes Mancini's script and says, all right, let's change this. So I wanted to mention that because, like I said, Mancini is the father of this franchise. There are so many cornerstone things of this franchise that he did not come up with. His screenplay, Bloody Buddy, which was about a doll who basically bled. That was like the gimmick of the doll. Like you gave it bandages and stuff like that. That's how it worked. Don Mancini's script was a bit of a satire on advertising culture and Saturday morning cartoons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that he was really all about. And all that's gone from the final script. His father was an advertiser, and I think that's where a lot of that came from. So with that being said, Charles Lee Ray, the voodoo, having to switch souls with Andy, all of this comes from Tom Holland. So he also played Spider-Man as well later in his career. Is that correct?
No.
That is a different Tom Holland. She's been waiting for that joke this whole show.
Yeah.
So I just want to mention that, like I said, with him being the steward of the franchise, there's so many elements that Tom Holland did create. And it's also why this movie feels a little different from the other sequels. Because at the end of the film, Tom Holland basically lost the editing rights and they brought in Don Mancini to help with the final cut of the film. Because when this movie was finally finished, it would deliver a 2.5-hour cut. Now, I really like this movie, but I could not imagine a 2.5 hour cut of it.
Yeah, no shit.
And if you're very curious, by the way, the footage is not out there. Apparently, they just got rid of it. They just, who cares about these deleted scenes? I don't give a crap about that. And basically, you found out more about Andy's dad and stuff like that. Just more filler and stuff like that. You got to see the doll. You got to see Chucky move a lot earlier. That got cut and changed. So this movie really has a really incredible production history, if you really think about it. And it's so very strange to have a writer come back in and take over editing duties. I can't think of another movie where that's happened, but clearly Mancini has been a huge part of the franchise since that moment. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So it worked out pretty well.
Well, it shows that a lot of love and care went into this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a Frankenstein creation, but it came together. Like yeah. I said, and you would see Mancini later reuse a lot of the ideas from his script. Because in his original idea, it was a lot more murky if Andy was the killer and the doll was just a fake.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of this movie, and we'll talk about it in just a sec. But it's not really a big part of the movie. Like, yeah. We know pretty early. The fucking opening scene is about him transferring his soul into a doll. So, I mean, it would be really weird if that didn't pay off. It's just one of those things. Like, there could have been a different world where they made that movie and nobody might have cared. But in this one, we got Tom Holland's version of Child's Play with Chucky instead of whatever they wanted to call it. I guess Buddy before was the original name. So
Bloody Buddy.
Not quite the ring to it as Child's Play would have. So
yeah,
I will say that. I wouldn't be as interested in that. By the way, fun fact, Don Mancini absolutely hates the voodoo stuff. He despises that change the most out of everything. Wow, you're really pondering this.
Yeah, because I can understand the complaint.
Because his idea was that Andy uses his blood on the doll that bleeds and it combines and like, it takes like, not the soul of Andy, but it breathes life into it. And he's more like a golem. Like he's the id of Andy. Like someone upsets Andy and the doll goes and kills him.
Hmm.
More than his, like, he invents, Tom Holland invents Charles Lee Ray, the serial killer angle. He invents all that. That's not there.
Yeah.
Mancini's idea was very different, which seems strange.
I think he could have cut out the whole voodoo angle at the end, but I guess he has to wrap up all his kills.
Yeah, but it's a big part of the franchise because the next four movies are all about him trying to capture somebody and switch souls.
Right.
They're all about voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a weird retcon in Bride of Chucky.
They kept with that theme.
When Mancini has like full control when he directs in Bride of Chucky, like he openly shits on that idea because Tiffany is like going through a book that says voodoo for dummies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like he was not a fan of that idea. But with everything said about the production, how does this movie actually begin?
Well, we start with a police chase. A man with a gun runs through an alleyway. That man, Brad Dourif.
And he's being chased by one Chris Sarandon.
Yeah.
Chris Sarandon, by the way, fun fact, he is not Susan Sarandon's brother. That is her ex-husband. She just kept the name.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast about Child's Play, and there were two facts I took away from it, is that they were unaware of this idea and kept referring to him as Susan's brother the entire show, and they were wrong, and it bothered me. I almost wanted to go into the podcast and punch them. And then later on, the other host was thirsty for the mom in this movie.
Mm.
I mean, like, thirsty for her.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't realize she was braless in some scenes, but he did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when I went back and watched the clip, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess she is. I mean, I didn't have a thing for Catherine Hicks.
Mm.
So.
All right.
Sorry. Let's go move on. I'm just telling you what I know, what I've learned in my journeys.
Bad guy shoots at the cop.
Bad guy. He has no name.
Not yet.
No name. We have no idea who he is. This mysterious long-haired individual.
Yes. I'll get there.
Okay. I believe you.
And tries to make it to the getaway vehicle after getting shot in the ass.
Yeah. So he takes it up the ass and from a bullet, which seems very damaging. Sadly, this causes the guy in the van, one Mr. Eddie Caputo, a fantastic bad guy name, by the way, who killed him. Eddie Caputo did. That son of a bitch. It just works.
Yeah.
Caputo fucking bolts and Dourif like goes nuts. Oh, God, don't leave me, you fucking ass. Oh, God. Like he's just acting his ass off.
And then he ends up in a toy store.
Yeah, he breaks his way into a toy. I love this. He has a chance to. There's a glass toy store and he shoots out the knob. I was like, just shoot the glass. What are you doing?
I guess he doesn't want to get cut.
He doesn't want to get cut.
No.
I'd go through the glass.
You would.
Yeah, I'd just jump right through it.
You're not the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah. I was going for a Batman thing, but sure, that works too. You're not fat and red.
Bad guy gets shot again, and he's dying. And
Charles Lee Ray is shot.
Yeah.
And
Charles Lee Ray.
Yeah. In the middle of this, he does begin the chant. But there's two things I want to bring up before we get there. One is it has the most rushed, like, credit scene in history, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the title card just kind of shows up when there's a few My Buddies in the background.
Yeah.
Or a few of the Chucky dolls in the background. That's because, like, there was a whole, like, intro of this movie they cut out. Where, like, there's a sting operation to try to catch the Lakeview Strangler is what he is?
Yeah.
They're trying to catch Charles Lee Ray. And all that's cut out. In the very opening scene of the movie, apparently, like, Chris Sarandon's character is wearing, like, a dress to lure him in.
Oh, my God.
And, like, in the opening shot, you see him throw something away. That's him throwing away the dress that he was wearing. And so there was a big, long intro to this. So that's why it feels a little bit rushed. But, yeah, I wanted to mention that. That's why they have that rushed title card. After that, we finally get him introducing the idea of transferring his soul into a doll.
Yeah.
Brad Dourif takes, like, the worst fall ever, like, brings down all the dolls on top of him, pulls one out of there, and starts doing the chant.
Yeah, the Dimbala chant.
The Dimbala chant.
Thought you were going to play something.
I was, and it didn't play. Nothing happened. That sucks. Well, I was going to play the chant. I'll have to put it in later.
Okay.
Didn't like I well, just
Well, you
played.
Know.
Sorry.
While dying, he performs a ritual over a Chucky doll. Lightning strikes.
It's a whole big event. Like, yeah. The clouds come rolling in every time he does it. And this is canon from now on. The clouds and the lightning will always strike. Yeah. And as he completes, like, the process, the lightning strike comes in and doesn't just light things on fire. The fucking toy store explodes.
It. Yeah.
All these propane-loaded toys in the 80s ignite, and they just blow out all the windows. Chris Sarandon somehow survives.
Yeah, he's, like, dumbfounded, basically.
Yeah.
But he does find a dead Brad Dourif.
Brad Dourif.
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 Whatever.
As we often always find dead Brad Dourifs in places. The other day, something was clogging the washing machine. I opened it up. Oh, it's a dead Brad Dourif. No wonder. I didn't expect. Well, you know, they get in the way all so often.
Are you done?
No, I'll never be done with you, lady.
All right. The Good Guy cartoon plays as Andy watches TV.
Yeah, so we cut over, and okay, so first off, we get introduction to Andy Barkley.
Yeah.
And he is played by Alex Vinson, correct?
Sure.
Yeah, he's played by he's played by a young Alex Vinson. First of all, this entire movie works because he's great.
Yeah.
He is a fantastic and cute child actor. This opening scene, we get introduced to him making his mother the worst breakfast ever. He burns the toast. He pours like a gallon of milk where the cereal's all floating out. And my favorite is he takes like 1 gallon of butter and puts it on the burnt toast.
Yeah.
And just drops it in there. And like he's like dropping stuff all over. It's the cutest thing. It really is adorable.
Yeah. I don't know how old he is. He's like 5?
Yeah. He's supposed to be 6.
6.
He's supposed to be 6. It's his birthday.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he was probably 6 at the time. Like I said, he's just great. You immediately sort of fall in love with this kid as the movie starts.
He wakes up his mother with the breakfast, and she's at first a little like, God damn it, why did you wake me up?
she really wanted to sleep.
She starts
and any parent him. Really knows this. This is just how it's going to go. You're going to have to get up early because kids are like, oh, the sun came up. Let's watch some cartoons and play. Mom, I'm hungry.
Yeah, he's ready to open his present.
Yeah. This is Catherine Hicks, by the way, who plays the mother. Apparently a very attractive woman to men of a certain age. She is coming off a Star Trek IV and a Dudley Moore comedy, Like Father, Like Son. This was a project she doesn't normally approach. She doesn't have a lot of horror movies really in her catalog. She's most well known from Seventh Heaven, where mm-hmm. she played the mom in that family. And she never got any legal trouble, so good for her. But basically, she read the script and just loved the character and thought it was a good story and thought she could do a great job in the part. And she's great here.
It is a good character.
It is, yeah.
She's a strong woman. She's a single mother.
So this is another change I want to talk about from Don Mancini's script. Don Mancini's script had the mother as the CEO of the toy company. And that's where a lot of the satirical elements came into play. Mm. And that's how Chucky got to Andy, basically. Or like an experimental version of the doll got to him, I think is sort of what the plot line was. And so them changing this to her being like a single mother, a widow. In this cut, we do not find out about the dad, really. We just know that he's dead, and there was one.
Yeah.
In the picture. And he died fairly recently. Chucky will talk about it in a little bit. In a very cruel way, by the way, if you really think about it. Making her this working mother, I think, makes her incredibly sympathetic and somebody you can identify with. Because this isn't just some horror story that happens to just some teenagers who are out there by the lake. Like, this woman is, she's working a job late. She's just busting her hump to try to make her kid have a good fucking birthday. And this goddamn serial killer wanders into her fucking life and tries to kill her kid and take away everything she's worked for.
Yeah.
And
she's a mama bear.
Yeah, it really is. You know, like, I don't really question her motivations at all. I've read some review where someone's like, why would she walk into the city? I was like, because her kid was going to go to jail for the rest of his life unless she found some proof of the impossible.
She even does what I would probably do in similar situation if Maya started saying that all these murders were happening and Maya was saying her doll did it. I would take the doll home and be like, all right, you fucking talk.
Love that scene later on where she's just like, come on, say something. Yeah. And of course, Chucky just says,
I would believe my kid too.
Yeah.
You know your kids.
Yeah. Well, what's more likely, a talking doll or your kid is disturbed from... Because apparently Andy was in the car crash that killed the father. That's in the deleted scenes. There's only a little bit written about that actually is canon, I guess. Mm. But yeah, apparently he was in the car crash, killed his father, and he saw him die. Mm. But they left that out because it'd be fucking dark as shit.
Yeah.
And the movie already has enough going on as it is. But apparently that is what occurs. So just letting you know. Fill in the blanks.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's part of the hour they cut out of this fucker.
The mother wanted to get a good guy doll for Andy, but she instead buys him clothes.
Listen, she brought this on herself because not only does she get him clothes, but she puts the jeans in a gigantic box that is the perfect size for a good guy doll.
Yeah.
And it is wrapped in good guy official wrapping paper. What the fuck was Andy supposed to think was in there?
Yeah, exactly.
So he's like, oh, it's pants. And she's like, oh, you're disappointed? He's like, well, yeah, he's disappointed. He wanted a toy. He's a kid. And you gaslit him that it was going to be what he wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally wearing the PJs. Like, she has to know, like, this is the main thing that he wants.
Yeah, she buys him, like, this hammer and...
It's like a
good guy.
A good guy set. Play set. Yeah. Yeah. Good guy construction set.
Well, apparently good guy dolls are pretty expensive, so that's a reason she couldn't afford it.
They were $100 in 1987 when the movie was made, so that would mean, what's that, like $500 today?
Yeah.
I think it'd be like a $220 doll or something like that. It'd be very expensive.
Yeah, very.
Very expensive. I don't know how much Teddy Ruxpin costs. Well, Chucky, if you think about it, is a combination of a few different things.
Well, she's at work, and one of her coworkers tells her, a peddler is in the back with a doll.
A peddler. They don't call
it a doll that she wants.
Not a bum or anything. It's a peddler.
Yeah, it's a peddler.
This guy with his rotted teeth shows up and he's clearly selling a stolen doll.
Yeah, she goes and pays for the back.
It's a much happier version of the scene from Jingle All the Way.
She gets in trouble with her boss, but it's not Christmas in the movie. It's just cold. Andy is stoked about his.
Her boss is a dick.
Yeah.
Like he's just like an old school 80s corporate dick.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. He's just giving her shit and then like...
Oh, your woman problems. You got a kid that needs looking after. Whoa.
Oh, it's his birthday. Well, fuck you. Work tonight.
Yeah, I know.
Her friend's even just like, I'll take over the shift. You work in shoes. Motherfucker's working at a shop. It's not just like, oh, let me work on a different part of the rocket tonight. No.
Yeah.
Not like a heart surgeon, just like, you know what? Let me try to reattach this toe real quick. Like, it's not like that out of the realm of possibility. Someone who works in shoes can come and work in, what was she, in makeup?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not fucking crazy, right? So anyway, he's a dick about it. So she has to send her friend Betty? Margaret?
Maggie.
Maggie. Sure, that sounds right. She has to send Maggie to babysit young little Andy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we find out that the good guy dolls have names, and Andy's is called Chucky.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least we think they have names.
Yeah, they do, because they...
We think they all have...
There's a commercial, and one was like Stewart or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Where we get to see the really creepy other giant version of the doll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which had one of the other voice actors who played... One of the guys who did one of the proto voices for Chucky, that's his only remaining bit, is playing that. Human-sized Chucky.
This is where Chucky asks Andy if he wants to play for the first time. You get that? Aunt Maggie is watching Andy and turns off the TV to get him ready for bed. Andy brushes his teeth, and while he does that, the news pops on the TV.
Chucky wants to watch the news because he saw that Eddie Caputo had escaped custody.
Yeah, so he's on a revenge.
Yeah, so his initial mission of wanting to get revenge is sort of what drives him. That's his only real goal. So I want to talk about one of the problems that the movie has, and this whole sequence really exemplifies it, is that this movie is a bit of a mystery, right?
Yeah.
We know the answer to the mystery.
Yeah.
We saw it in the opening scene. And I think that is something that detracts from the movie and its pacing a bit. I like these sequences here, but the idea that they sort of are ambiguous about is Andy the killer or is Chucky the killer is kind of absurd if you think about it. I mean, it's not even that we've seen this movie 1,000 times. It's more of it just what you've shown us already leads us to say, like, that's Charles Lee Ray and the doll. Otherwise, why are we following this kid and the doll? You know, why did she get it from a mysterious peddler if that's not what you're telling us this is, right? Yeah. That's how cinematic language works. And then once we get to this evening, we're like, well, maybe it's not the doll. But no, it clearly fucking is the doll. You know, that would be my really only one critique of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a fair critique.
It's the one thing that really bothered me paying attention to it again in the story.
Maggie is really bewildered by that because she
bewildered
basically tells Andy that he's not supposed to turn on the TV. So she chalks it up to Andy being the
one. Yeah, I'm just being a kid going in there and messing around, turn on the TV.
Putting Chucky in front of the TV.
By the way, the Caputo segment airs perfectly for Chucky to see. It's the only thing. Perfect TV time. Perfect movie timing, right?
Yeah, of course. Andy gets in trouble. Then she's reading a book and Chucky comes out and wanders around the house.
Yeah, and you get to see little glimpses of Chucky running around. And actually, in these running shots, I do believe that was the producer's two-year-old niece.
Neighbor.
Two-year-old neighbor was actually playing Chucky in these sequences. And there's photos of, like, him and the little person who would play Chucky also in these sequences.
Yeah.
Together, the different people who did. And it's pretty effective, in all honesty, is it's just one little quick thing at the back of the frame. This movie is the only one, I think, that really employs human performers filling in for Chucky. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the other movies do that. I think they rely entirely on animatronics and CGI later on. And I think that's one of the stronger elements of this film is it using it. It's at times a little hokey, but it's really effective at other times.
Mm-hmm. I think when they're practical, the iterations of Chucky that use practical effects more, I think, are better films.
I think so too. We'll talk about more of the effects work when we get to Chucky actually coming alive.
Well, Maggie thinks Andy's up from bed and goes to chalk it out.
Check it out. That's how that works.
I
let me chalk this thing out real quick. She just draws an outline around Andy.
I for some reason I have an O.
but I like that you didn't correct yourself. You're like Ron Burgundy.
Maggie thinks Andy's up from bed and goes to check it out. She sees a chair pulled up to the door. She hears another bang in the kitchen, but just sees flour spilled on the floor.
Yeah, she's led around by Chucky, and she has these vases that are just conveniently like Chucky sized, right?
Yeah.
Perfect for him to hide behind.
And she's, you know, freaking out a little bit, but she gets interrupted by a phone call from the mom.
Yeah, she's super excited, and she initially is like worked up and then sort of calms down. Is like, no, everything's fine. Andy was probably running around here trying to mess with me and he went to bed.
Yeah.
She calms herself down as she talks to Karen.
When she goes to clean up the flour, she quickly is hit in the face with a toy hammer.
Yeah, this is like a POV shot. We aren't showing who does this. As I said, this is is incredibly ambiguous. The movie does lead you to believe that it very much could have been Andy. So she is hit in the face, and it's a pretty nice effect. She turns, and there's a very cool stunt. Now, it is very clear the stunt woman jumps out of the window. That's probably the only thing that's weird about this kill is like, yeah, like he could have hit her in the eye with that, but it's really unlikely she'd have just like launched herself out the window because of it. But she does, and it does look pretty cool though when the dummy hits the van.
Yeah.
They made a standard mannequin, and they filled it with cement and dropped it. That's why it like, boom, it hits with such a big thud and looks so heavy.
It's a real ambiguous kill, but it's a kill nonetheless.
It is a kill. He's dead.
Mom comes home to a bunch of cops in her house, making themselves right at home.
Yeah, we watched the kill count, and I'm glad he pointed out what I thought, too, during this scene, is that, like, one cop is just, like, reading the paper, kicking his feet up on her couch, like, what the fuck? Get out of here, you fucking pig! Like, Jesus Christ, what's the matter with you? My friend just died. Fuck off!
The detective looks at the footprints in the flour and thinks Andy may have pushed Maggie out of the window.
He introduces himself here to Karen and is finally connected with this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
We have that connecting thread here. And I do want to mention, I think Chris Sarandon's Chicago accent is really solid.
Yeah.
The Chicago accent doesn't get the credit it deserves because it's not the Boston accent, which is a lot of fun. I know you looked at me like I was about to do a Boston accent.
Yeah.
Like you kind of cringed a little bit like, oh, God, is he going to do a Boston accent? I don't do accents. All right. It's not something I do.
You just bore. on the floor. Yeah, stuff like that.
He's out in the yard.
You got to do a Kennedy impression.
Basically, yeah. Everybody up there is Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
Basically, they all have that inflection.
So what else has he got to go on besides Andy's the killer? So Andy notices Chucky has flour on his feet, and he runs out to tell the detective.
And immediately, Karen is already like, no, don't say anything. Don't say anything. Because seriously. Also, by the way, you cannot kick detectives out of a murder investigation.
No.
Like, they're going to tell you, no, you need to leave, lady. Yeah. We're investigating a crime here, and we think your son probably did it.
Maybe things were different in the 90s. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or the 80s.
Either way, she kind of throws them out, and she tells Andy not to say anything, but he still yells out that Chucky did it. And the detective humors the kid, but, you know, it is what it is.
The detective wants his cohort to take a possible murder weapon into forensics, and it's the hammer.
Yeah.
The toy hammer.
Which is not going to be good. It's going to have Andy's prints all over it, but it's his toy hammer.
Yeah. Oh. And the guy thinks he's kidding because it's kind of
small.
Yeah.
Itty bitty.
Itty bitty.
It's a very small little.
He's insinuating that the kid did it.
Well, it is the only theory that makes sense if you think about it, right?
This is where Andy reveals he's been talking to Chucky this whole time. And that his real name is Charles Lee Ray. Andy's mother tries to tell him that Chucky's not real, but he insists. Mom tucks Andy into bed, and he tells Chucky he was right, that she didn't believe him.
Yeah, yeah. And is this the point where Chucky said that his dad sent him from heaven?
Yeah.
To look after him? Man, if you really look back, that is so cruel.
Yeah.
That is so, can you imagine Charles Lee Ray just like the second Andy leaves the room chuckling to himself about that?
Yeah, of course. Like,
Think about that. It is interesting. And taking a look at it from like Karen's perspective, Catherine Hicks, her son saying those horrible things about her friend, like she doesn't really know how to take that, right? She immediately kind of shuts it down, but it opens up a door she doesn't really want to think about, right?
Yeah.
That her son killed her friend because he's a little psychopath.
Yeah.
Which is something that, like I said, she doesn't really want to fathom, but maybe he's not.
Mm.
But we already know. Even though the movie doesn't want to know.
Next day, Karen takes Andy and Chucky to school, but he escapes and gets on the L train.
I do want to say it's very weird for him to take a My Buddy Doll to school. And I think the film also thought that I would think it was strange.
I thought it was strange, too.
Because literally, as I'm having this thought, like, why would he take this doll into school?
It's so huge.
You can't do that. Immediately, another kid walks right behind him in the background with another My Buddy doll. And I'm like, well played, movie. Well played.
Yeah.
Plot hole filled. So apparently it was show and tell My Buddy Day at school. We'll just go with that and I'll let it go.
Maybe it was. I mean, Mai was able to bring a stuffed animal to school.
Well, yeah, but it's a little convenient for the story that he got to bring the one thing he would need here for this story to move forward. Listen, Tom Holland was very helpful here, but some of the leaps of logic we need from point A to point B of the story are really far-fetched for this movie, and that's one of them. I'll still be like, that doesn't really work for me, but hey. It is what it is. Also, I know it's the 80s, and I know things were different then, but I'm pretty sure a 5 or 6-year-old on the L train by himself on a school day would probably get one person to be like, hey, kid, where's your mommy?
Yeah, I don't know. Things were different.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure there'd be one person who would ask, especially if he's just there by himself with a very expensive doll. You would lead me to believe, like, where's that kid's parent? You didn't come just here. You didn't walk here with that doll.
One of the things that I enjoyed about this movie as a kid was how brave Andy is.
Yeah, he is a brave little guy.
He gets on the L train and he goes to the South Side where all the crime is, where all the homeless people are, where
he goes
all
the
mentally
the
ill
city.
People are, where all everybody bad thing could happen to you, he goes to. And he's just like, la, 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 I have my doll and no big deal.
Yeah, he's fine. He doesn't really care at all.
He's an excellent character.
Yeah, he really is. He's a very good child actor, and it actually is a good character. He's a kid who has to deal with a lot of stuff. So I think that's a big part of what really occurs here. I like everything about young Alex Vincent's performance, and the character is pretty well written for a kid. Mm-hmm.
He gets off the L train, and with Chucky, he goes to a flop house. While Andy's,
that's a good way to put it, a flop house with a very convenient rocking chair right in front.
While Andy's peeing, Chucky makes his move. He turns on the gas in the house, and it's...
Eddie Caputo's
house.
This is Eddie Caputo's house. Eddie Caputo doesn't get a line in this movie. He wakes up and hears something going on, brings out his gun, walks around the house until he thinks he sees where Chucky's at and just shoots.
Yeah, he shoots in the kitchen.
He never sees Chucky. He has no idea that this whole thing is happening. He never finds this
out. He just thinks somebody's breaking into his house.
So he just kicks the door open and fires. And he blows himself up. And we see Andy walking around the house, putting himself in harm's way. And that's all we get of that.
he ends up walking away from the house and you don't see him.
Mm-hmm, because we cut next to the police station.
Yeah, mom gets called in the police station and they all think Andy is crazy.
I want to say something right now is, you know, we talked about the L train sequence earlier. This movie has such brilliant cinematography of Chicago. The look of this whole city is just so goddamn fantastic. Director of photography on this is Bill Butler. He did Jaws, The Conversation. He worked Spielberg, Coppola. Just an amazing cinematographer. One of the things that helps this movie stand the test of time. Even scenes like in this police station, which is supposed to be a drab area, have this great, unique look to them. I just love all these older movies shot on film. And this is an oddly beautiful movie. And I wanted to mention that now, so we got to one of the more drab areas of it, where I think Butler can always find the brilliance and the beauty in most things.
Poor Andy has to spend time in the psych ward. Karen takes Chucky home. And this is where I was telling you that she talks to the doll and's like pleading with it, like, talk, you fucking asshole.
Yeah. And I think we get a couple of emotional sequences here that I don't know if Don Mancini's script would have ever had in it. We had the police station interrogation where Chucky won't come alive. And Alex Vincent's so good, like hitting on the doll, like trying to get it to say something. And even Chris Sarandon's like, damn, man. Like, he didn't want this kid to be crazy. This seems like a nice lady. This kid seems really sweet. This kid lost his dad. This story sucks. Like, that's the look on his face. And we get that from an expression. And then, like you said, she comes home, and I don't think this movie is perfect, but this scene is.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, we get her coming home, pleading with the doll to say something, and it activates like any other good guy doll would.
Yeah.
And you see her scoff at herself, laugh, like, what the fuck did I think was going to happen, right? The fucking doll was going to come alive and do something. And so she goes about her normal chores, walks through the house, picks up the good guy box to throw it away, and something falls out of it, and it's the batteries to Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
The music and this slow zoom in. Now it's going to capture as a clip, but it's all just music. So it means absolutely nothing. But the way Catherine Hicks plays it is so amazing because it hits the ground, an initial look of confusion, and then the realization slowly washes over her. Like, I don't put batteries in that thing. How the fuck has it been talking for weeks or how long?
Yeah.
Like, the way she makes that realization is so good, and how she slowly approaches the doll.
Yeah, she picks it up and she opens the back hatch to it, and there's no batteries in it. And so she's like,
"Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?"
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It initially, she's scared out of her wits, apparently, and drops the doll. And there's this great effect where Chucky hits the ground and rolls right underneath the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how they did that?
Mm-mm.
They built the set on an incline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a regular doll, and it just rolls out of the frame. That's it. It looks so effective. Like, wow, man, how'd they get a little guy in there, a little person in there? He moved great. But no, it's just a doll rolling because it sits on an incline. And she slowly, like, creeps her way down to look and check, and it's just, you know, Chucky. Just a doll. Just a good guy doll.
She goes after him and begs him to talk. She threatens to throw him in the fire, and he comes to life and attacks her.
I said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy slut! Did you fuck with me?
He makes his profane entrance to the film.
Yeah.
Chucky comes alive. And oddly enough, like, even today, the effect of, like, his face coming to life is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I want to mention that. These effects are done by Kevin Yeager and Alan Coulter. They did animatronic work, and this was not the very beginning of animatronics, but it was going to go a long way, and this is one of the films that really helped push that medium really into the forefront. The work they did is truly amazing. There isn't a scene in this movie where the animatronic disappoint, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's all fantastic and amazing work.
Yeah.
And this was one that got Kevin Yeager almost any work he could ever want, any job he could ever want in animatronics for the rest of his career. This was a great project for him because not only was it his stepping stone to doing whatever he wanted, but he also met his wife, the lead in the film, Catherine Hicks.
Yeah.
They met on the movies, fell in love, and they've been married ever since.
36 years?
36 plus, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't do the math. Whenever this movie came out to now, whenever that is.
Well, she, after this attack, Chucky escapes. And she goes and hunts down the detective to try to tell him Andy wasn't crazy and the doll is alive. He doesn't believe her, so she decides to head downtown where she was sold to the doll.
This is more really good acting from Sarandon to breathe a little life into the scene, because he's initially sort of excited to see her. And then she says, oh my God, the killer doll's over there. I got the proof. I need some help. And he's just like, good night, Miss Barkley. Like, just a shrug, just defeated. Like, oh God, sorry. Yeah. You know, like, he is not happy about this situation. He isn't. He doesn't. This is the shitty part of his job. And I love that he always has that over his head this whole time.
He's good actor.
Yeah, he does a really great job. This movie has an amazing cast and it just helps out immensely. But, and then she says, she's like you said, she's going to go to like the worst part of the city to go look for any information. And he knows that's a terrible idea when he just wants to go home and watch Monday Night Football and chill out. Instead, he has to go and help keep this lady safe.
He doesn't believe her, so she decides to head downtown where she was sold a doll looking for Chucky. She finds the guy that sold her the doll, and he tries to rape her, but the detective comes to the rescue.
Yeah.
The peddler tells him where he got the doll, and it was
a fun montage of Catherine Hicks trying to pantomime. He had shitty teeth to, like, all the homeless people she meets on this journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's just pantomiming, describing this homeless guy over and over again. I don't know why, but I found that very amusing on a rewatch. He spills his guts once the detective comes in.
He tells him where he got the doll, and it was the same store where Charles Lee Ray died. The detective thinks that's odd.
And immediately sort of...
he still dismisses it.
Yeah, like, the second he hears the name of the store, he's like, didn't need that puzzle piece in there. You know, because he doesn't want to believe this about the doll. But, I mean, he has, as a logical man, to be like, why the fuck did this 6-year-old kid go all the way across the city on his own to rub out somebody he's never met before, unless Charles Lee Ray told him to do it?
Yeah.
Because he's like, it doesn't make any sense unless this one thing is true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, as a detective, you can see that bothers him, but he can't believe that there is still a talking doll around.
He takes her home, and she's like, we gotta solve this. He's Mr. Rational, though.
It's late.
He drops her off, and she pleads with him pretty hard. The detective is driving along, and Chucky attacks him from behind. He then tries to stab at him through the seat with a big knife, all while driving. Eventually, he crashes.
He should have stuck with the strangling, because he was a much stronger strangler. Because when he goes for the stabs, like, it's just whiff after whiff after whiff.
Yeah.
Like, just miss after miss.
Angry whiff.
By the way, how long was Chucky in the backseat of that car?
No kidding.
Yeah, is he just like, oh, shit, I didn't know he was going to pick up Karen. All right, I'll just keep hiding. Like, how long was he just chilling out back there? I know he doesn't have to really worry about it being cold, but that actually was a big issue when they actually shot the real scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they do the crash, Sarandon's just like, the vehicle's upside down, and he's just out there laying on the pavement, or the bits of the torn up car, as Chucky comes around and terrorizes him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Chucky is sort of trying to cut him a little bit, and he's mocking him that nothing he can do can hurt him. As, by the way, like, he's just shooting bullet after bullet. Like, I hope no one's just standing around here trying to come and help. They're getting shot in the feet. It's like, yeah. He's just trying to shoot Chucky over and over
again. I was like, conserve your round.
Yeah, I was like, hey, like, wait till you can see him coming. Because he's still a melee attack. Like, Chucky's not going to throw anything at you.
Well, like you say, he's underneath the wreckage of this car, and he's being taunted by Chucky. And Chucky makes one final lunge with a knife, but the detective shoots him.
He's like, you can't hurt me. And then he immediately gets hurt by a bullet.
Yeah.
Like, you can see that it hurts him. A little bit of blood comes out. And by the way, they shot this in Chicago, actually on location, clearly. But it was like one of the coldest, bitterest winters they ever had, really on record. And Chris Sarandon, he was so cold that he actually had to get some warm coffee in between takes, because his vocal cords were kind of freezing up, kind of stiffening up on him. That's how cold it was that night when he had to be in there. And it took 2 nights to shoot this whole sequence because how slow the animatronics move.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing. We think the animatronics look great and they're better than CG. They move like molasses. They take forever to do anything.
Meanwhile, while all this is happening, Karen is at Charlie's Ray's house, looking at all the weird paintings on the walls, and there's a bunch of voodoo stuff, so you can see.
Yeah, this is where the voodoo correlation comes into there. And by the way, he told her the specific address, so he had to know she was going to be there.
The detective shows up and says he basically believes her and where he thinks Chucky is.
He doesn't say anything about the attack.
No,
nothing.
Not a thing.
Which is so strange.
I think it's strange too.
I don't know if they added this sequence later. And maybe he just saw Chucky or something. I don't really know. But either way, I love the sequels before.
Well, Chucky, you know where he's at? He's at a voodoo priestess's house.
Voodoo priest. He's not a woman.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Voodoo priest.
Voodoo priest. Or at least we believe so. So this was another guy who got shafted by the cuts because he had like a whole storyline, apparently, to hit the cutting room floor.
Mm-hmm.
There was like a scene of him like using his voodoo to like save a baby and like refusing the parents' money. So this guy is a face. And because of the cut, you just assume he's one of Charles Lee Ray's criminal buddies, right?
Yeah.
I always thought that for years. And then, like I said, as I was watching this cut, I sort of noticed that he's like, you're an abomination. Like, he's furious with Charles Lee Ray for doing what he's done. Knowing that about what was left on the cutting room floor, about like the good deeds he was doing and him just wanting to teach Charles Lee Ray about, teach people about voodoo and what the good it could do. And seeing it perverted, like, it's kind of sad that this is a character who was good. We never got the chance to really see that or show that in this cut, except for a couple lines. But Chucky does show up to this guy's house and show himself off in what is a real showpiece for the animatronics, right?
Yeah.
Because he's just standing there like, hey, check me out. Do you like my new body? As John is horrified by the sight.
Yeah, like you said, the priest just basically tells Chucky to fuck off, but Chucky takes a voodoo doll out and starts breaking some legs.
Which is really one of the oddest kills in the franchise, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does start breaking this guy's legs, and he wants to know how to get out of the body. And this is another addition, obviously, by Tom Holland. And I want to mention it because it's a big plot point for all the rest of the movies, is the first person that Chucky revealed himself to is the only person he can transfer his soul into.
Yeah.
So that's what he has to do. He needs Andy. Once he finds this out, he stabs the voodoo doll. And this does not kill John, but it is a fatal blow.
Yeah.
Chucky leaves and the detective and Karen come running up pretty soon.
They find the priest and he tells Karen about Andy being in danger.
He tells them 98% of what they need to know.
Mm-hmm.
They ask how to kill him. He said, you have to shoot the haw.
Now we're with Andy and he sees Chucky and starts freaking out. But everybody basically thinks he's crazy.
Yeah, so this is obviously one of the shots where they use one of the little a little person. He's climbing up the stairs, and Andy immediately begins to lose his mind about it. And he's talking to the doctor, another character who also gets shafted by the cut. He's a character who only wants to help Andy in the situation because he identifies. Andy's a kid who lost his dad. These are kids who have trouble with real trauma. Like, he wants to help him. You don't really get that from this cut. He could be a bad guy in this cut as well. So I just want to mention that that's here, another element that we don't really get to see. But what we do get to see that's great is young Alex Vincent really breaking down when the doctor leaves him. He's like, don't leave me alone. And he breaks down crying. It's absolutely heartbreaking and really, like, you can just see the fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is a great performance. And the director, Tom Holland, got criticized. He wanted to talk about and Alex Vincent and like his parents dying and how everybody on the set was disappointed with him and how he was making the movie worse. Like, he just said every horrible thing he could to this kid to like break him down. And while it's a pretty crabby thing to do, the performance really shows on screen.
Yeah.
That he really does have a breakdown where he's completely at the end of his wits and emotion. It's a great moment of child acting, even if Tom Holland had to be a dick to get there.
Yeah.
It's just sort of one of those things that sort of happens. It's a weird part of acting.
Well, Chucky grabs the keys to Andy's cell and goes to kill him, but Andy's under the bed. He escapes and hides, but Chucky finds him.
There's like a whole bunch of stealth sequence of Chucky invading this place. There's production photos of him like behind orderlies and talking to other members of the facility there. Like, Chucky had a whole adventure in this place that they cut out.
Hmm. The psych dude catches up with Andy and tries to inject him.
The psych dude. The doctor comes up. Professor X wanders in. And
the psych dude.
Yeah, the psych dude. The actor from the TV show Psych wanders in there and begins to save Andy Barkley. So no, he wants to sedate Andy because he thinks he's going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about to try to give him the sedative, and that's when Chucky attacks.
He stabs him in the leg and then puts electroshocks to him.
And starts shocking him. And once again, more great work from Andy. Young Alex Vincent's so good here.
Yeah, he's basically begging Chucky to stop.
Stop, stop. It's so good. Like, all that he does here is really just amazing.
Andy goes back to his house and hides.
Which is another plot contrivance, but I will allow it. Like, he just wandered to his home from the other side of Chicago?
Yeah, from the south side of Chicago.
I was like, nobody saw this kid wandering around and said like, hey kid, you seem lost and you're covered in blood. That seems strange. Well, he doesn't have blood on him. But he has some blood on him.
Chucky comes through the chimney, but Andy's ready for him with a bat.
This is a cool effect, by the way, when he drops down and he kicks the gate.
The fireplace screen.
Yeah, the fireplace screen, when he kicks that down. It, them using an actual human performer gives Chucky such weight in this movie mm-hmm. and makes him like this real threat that can absolutely choke and kill Andy. Like, it's something that is missing from some of the later movies, just here in spades. It's actually very, very cool. And, you know, it's an effect they actually use. Someone who is a little person, as small as they could probably find a performer who could do the role, but they actually build the sets about 30% bigger. So it looks to scale. And it sounds cheesy and hokey, but it works so damn well.
Mm-hmm. Annie, at this point, is just trying to stay alive. Chucky eventually gets to him and knocks him out with the bat. And this is when he starts performing the ritual again. But he's interrupted by Karen and the detective.
We do get a one-liner. Batter up!
Chucky bites Karen and stabs the detective in the leg.
The detective is like a jobber here. He goes down so fast.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do anything of any note at all in this fight.
The detective goes to look for Chucky, but can't find him, so he attacks anyways. He knocks him out. Karen shoots him in the leg. He attacks her, and she puts him in the fire. Andy gets the matches, and Chucky begs for his life.
Right.
And then we get the line I love from a kid.
This is the end, friend.
Yeah, he drops that line on him and lights him up. This is a pretty energetic action sequence here of them trying to take out Chucky, who is damn near unkillable, really.
Mm-hmm.
As a small doll, you don't really think he presents a lot of threat, but he is very difficult to destroy. Also, by the way, there is this. This is the kind of fire Brad Dourif is bringing in this entire finale.
Yeah.
Like him just screaming in that microphone. His performance in this is iconic. It's amazing.
It's how you sound when you're burning up.
Yeah.
Well, they burn him up and it's over, right? No. Chucky is still alive. He attacks Andy again. They lock themselves into a bedroom, but Chucky stabs at the door, nicking Karen's hand.
Yeah.
He still comes forward, even though he's burnt up.
Yeah, he has this whole sequence where he's like stabbing the door, like each time closer to her head, each stab. Mm-hmm. The tension is really ratcheting up.
Karen shoots his head off, yet he still comes forward. She shoots an arm and then a leg, and it keeps moving. She shoots it until it's completely out of bullets.
The revolver's just clicking when the other detective comes in, his partner, and she almost shoots him.
Yeah.
Turns around, she was ready to kill. But to be fair, like she had the adrenaline pumping.
She goes for the detective after the other detective shows up. The other detective is trying to understand what happened and doesn't believe his partner when he tells him basically it was the doll.
Yeah, the doll did it, you know. And he goes out there and collects the doll, and he's like, "This doll." So he lays down the severed, burnt head on top of the TV, and like literally the second he does it, it waits for just the one moment for the rim shot. As the body of Chucky comes through the vent right next to his throat and then grabs his Adam's apple.
They shoot him in the heart and he's done for good.
Yeah, yeah. The detective actually finally is able to redeem himself and nails a perfect shot right into Chucky's heart, killing him and putting an end to the franchise right then and there. The movie does end on a very odd freeze frame of Andy staring back.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's sort of to signify like this is trauma that's going to stick with Andy forever, but I guess he already had that. I don't know. And obviously, we get to see the character grow up throughout the franchise, and it does, so I guess it works.
Before we get to the trivia, if this is a movie that you really loved, why don't you go through the social media so I don't have to?
Sure. It is Gritty Reboot. You can search for that on Instagram or TikTok, and that's probably the easiest or best way to get a hold of us. But if you'd like to send us a longer clip or ask a more intricate question, please don't hesitate to email us at grittyrebootcast@gmail.com. That's probably the best way to send us any bigger attachment or, like I said, any more intricate requests.
Yeah. Let us know how you feel.
Yeah.
All right. Chucky's full name, Charles Lee Ray, is derived from names of notorious killers, Charles Manson, Lee Harvey Oswald, who assassinated
allegedly
JFK, and James Earl Ray, who assassinated Martin Luther King.
I'm glad you said that fact, because every time I kept wanting to say James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
He played Darth Vader. He killed younglings. I don't know if you know that.
The Chucky films have always been accused of inspiring violence in children. One case linked to the series was a gang in Manchester kidnapping and murdering a 16-year-old girl. While they tortured her, they forced her to listen to recordings of the gang leader repeating the catchphrase, "I'm Chucky, wanna play?" Director Tom Holland has always defended the first film from these accusations, stating that viewers of horror movies could only be influenced by their content if they were unbalanced to begin with.
I never really think anybody's ever watched a movie and that was the one thing that convinced them to commit murder. Mm-hmm. Other than maybe inspiring them for something they could possibly do in the murder, I think they were always capable of it, and the movie wasn't the thing to push them over the edge. It's an unfortunate incident, you know, and it sucks that it gets to be tied to this movie because of what they did, but it's just a sad footnote, really.
Originally, the studio billed Chris Sarandon as the top star over Catherine Hicks, but Sarandon requested that Hicks be top billed since he felt she carries the picture, and I agree.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'd agree with that 100%. She does give, and she's almost in every scene, she does give the better performance. Well, Chris Sarandon is very good, but Catherine Hicks is really amazing in this movie. There are four great performances in this movie that really anchor it.
In the early 1990s, a now-closed chain of appliance stores called The Good Guys thought about changing their name after the Child's Play movie came out because they were getting a lot of prank calls about the movies. Plus, people kept calling and going into the stores asking them if they had Good Golly Dolls.
In the 80s and 90s, people had nothing better to do.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Yep. That's it right there. This was the people today who make like troll TikTok videos and stuff like that. This is what they did back then.
Mm-hmm.
They went there and they crank called poor hardworking guys at a Good Guy store.
Composer Joe Renzetti and singer-songwriter Simon Stokes recorded an ending credits theme song about Chucky the doll that wasn't used in the final finished film because studio executives thought it made Chucky seem less scary. The song can be heard in one of the trailers of the film.
Yeah, it is. I got a chance to actually hear a little bit of the song, and it is cheesy as all get out. It is maybe the most sugary song that has ever been written in the history of man, and I love it.
As you should.
Yeah.
All right. Reviews on this film. 3.5 user review, 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.7 IMDb, and a 5%. Let's forget the last part.
And a 5%.
Well, it was going to be Metacritic, but it's not 5%.
I think it's like 53.
Yeah.
Metacritic's pretty low.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes higher than I thought.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people like this movie.
It's a great film.
It's a fantastic movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Hands down. I have a lot of fond memories of this movie.
I like this film a lot, too. So, yeah, it's one of the rare horror movies that you really like a lot more than I do, but I still would like this movie.
It's a near perfect movie.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's damn good. I think it's damn good.
Yeah.
I listed my complaints, and they're not that big a deal.
This is a one-star review of this movie.
Fuck this guy. I'm sorry. Let's hear him out.
And to think, when I was younger, I actually thought this movie was scary. It's the name of this.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that feel that way about it.
All right. First off, I would like to say that in real life, that doll would have died a lot quicker. There would be no BS. The doll would pick up the knife and he would have gotten shot in the head immediately. And no, he wouldn't have gotten up because he's a doll, not a freaking superhuman. He's made of wood. There would be no head left. And in real life, he would have burned a lot quicker. Let me remind you that it wasn't some sort of super demon that inhabited this doll. It was a person. An ordinary person who could, even while he was in the doll, feel pain. If I was lit on fire, I wouldn't get up. I would just lay there because I would be in an ass load of pain. It was a doll that could feel pain. Hell, give me a lighter and some gas and I'll kill the little bastard. This is all in all caps, by the way.
Yeah.
But if you like this movie, good for you. I was a tad angry about the plot, no kidding. That didn't make an ounce of sense.
I think that's been conveyed.
Yeah, that's the review.
Well, that guy was furious about it.
So mad.
Like, listen, there's always a little bit of suspension of disbelief. But like I said, like, that's the deal with Chucky. He's attacking a child, first off. He catches you by surprise. He's a stealth killer. He's not coming at you in brute force, right?
Mm-mm.
Even though he does in some of the sequels he does. And Ready Player One. Remember when he has the cameo? He's like, just like going around, like just stabbing people left and right. Like he's Yoda. That's what he seems like in that movie. That was a terrible review.
Yeah.
That was a terrible review. But he did truly hate this project.
Yeah.
And
It was hard finding a review that wasn't one star.
Somebody like, really legit. Despised the movie.
Yeah. So I think that's a good thing to say about the movie.
Yeah. And with that, we are ready to wrap up this week's installment of Child's Play. Oh, that's right. In the year of our Lord, 1988, Roger Ebert was very much alive! And he and Gene Siskel reviewed a little film called Child's Play. And you might think Roger Ebert hated that movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he actually enjoyed Child's Play a little bit. Unlike most weeks where I just have the written review, I actually was able to get a solid clip of them reviewing Child's Play. So without any further wait time, gentlemen, let me present to you Siskel and Ebert's review of Child's Play.
Our next movie is named Child's Play, and it begins with a dying mass murderer, the Lakeshore Strangler, who has studied voodoo and uses black magic to transport his soul into the body of a good guy doll. Catherine Hicks plays the mother who unknowingly buys the possessed doll and brings it home as a present for her son, played by Alex Vincent. After his babysitter is killed by being pushed out the window by the doll, the little boy claims that Chucky the doll is alive, but of course, no one will believe him. Not even Hicks believes her own son until she makes the chilling discovery that Chucky can talk, even though he doesn't have any batteries.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Child's Play is a good example of the sort of horror movie that I call the false alarm film, because every time there's a false alarm and then everybody relaxes, then the creature attacks.
Big surprise.
The movie is well made with convincing performances by Catherine Hicks and little Alex Vincent, and I guess I should also mention they did a good job on the doll. In the early scenes it looks so wholesome, you know it has something wrong with it, and in the later scenes it transforms itself into a truly frightening personality. It was an effective horror film.
It wasn't an effective, it was not for me, no. I mean, I laughed at the doll, and I also don't like to have scenes with children in terrorized situations. You remember, you were said at the top of the show about how you were sick and tired of seeing priests being used as villains in a way, or their sacraments being tossed around. I hate to see kids in perilous situations. I think it's one of the easiest, cheapest thrills that you can do.
This is a plucky little kid, and he stands up for himself, and he is not just simply running around screaming.
He's not entirely.
He's given something to do, and he's a pretty good actor.
I think that the business, if you want a picture about where a doll comes alive and is really threatening, I think a good film was, a better film was with Anthony Hopkins and Margaret called Magic a few years ago.
Check that out, by the way. I've never seen that.
And I didn't buy it at all.
Magic, that movie they talk about, a killer doll movie. I've never seen it or heard of it. But in my research, I found it was one of like the inspirations for the movie. And I was like, oh, I've never heard of this movie. So, yeah, young Anthony Hopkins. Well, young-ish Anthony Hopkins. But yeah, no, they dug the movie. I think Ebert gave it 2.5 stars, maybe 3. I need to double check that. But they said this was fairly well-liked with critics at the time. Nothing crazy, but it's uncommon for critics to like a movie like this one.
Yeah.
And it stood the test of time. So to end the show here, I want to talk about one last thing before we close out, and that is the number of shows we're doing here. I know a lot of people might expect us to cover a lot of the installments in the franchise. But as I said before, Don Mancini is the steward of this franchise. And everything that he has made has been in canon, from this movie all the way to the TV show. So a lot of people would say Bride of Chucky is a reboot, but that's written and directed by Don Mancini. And I'm not sorry, that's written by Don Mancini, directed by Ronnie Yu, who did Freddy vs. Jason. And that movie is in line with the canon. And when they do the direct-to-video sequels a couple years later, he's still the scarred-up Chucky. So that's just another sequel in canon. I think if we did an episode for those, that would be like saying Friday the 13th Part 6 is a reboot, just because it has a different tone and style than the previous movies.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're only going to cover the MGM reboot, even though I think we might do like a franchise retrospective entirely on Child's Play later in the future. Could be fun. But next week, we are going to cover the Aubrey Plaza, Mark Hamill starred version of this movie. This movie's rights were split up, and we're not talking about that this week. We're going to talk about all that next week and the horrible mess that was made by the studio here and the split between Tom Holland and all this other stuff that went down. And we'll cover a film that a lot of people don't like, but I think we found above average.
Yeah.
But we will see how it goes.
Yeah, with an analytical eye.
Yeah, yeah. We're definitely going to pay attention to it. So we're going to tear it down and let you know everything there is to know about it and get you all the great facts about it. So we'll see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.